And so sometimes we just need to let go of the goal of I need to grow, right? I need to be better. I need to be more. And we just need to let go of that for a second and enjoy this is enough. I'm enjoying the process. I'm in it. I am. I'm working. It's good.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 59 of the Mad Happy Podcast. I'm Mason, and today we have a really exciting episode with our guest, Connor Beaton. If you don't know Connor, Connor is a coach, a motivational speaker, a host of his own podcast, and someone who's really been a huge inspiration to me. He has a show called Man Talks, and that's also his handle on Instagram. And I had been wanting to get him on the show and talk to him for a really long time. I think he's a leader, in my opinion, in terms of men's mental health. And it was really exciting to hear his story and get to draw a lot of similarities to my own story of him having divorced parents and growing up about the power of a father figure and kind of what that means to be a man, you know, especially in this modern age. I think one of the things that I'm most passionate about is really men's mental health, kind of based off my own story and just how I feel like I can really relate to others. Men's mental health, I feel like, is really its own beast and its own kind of struggle that is so hard for a lot of people to talk about and recognize. You know, we're constantly told, or at least I was growing up as boys, you know, don't cry, tough it out, no pain, no gain, right? All of these things that are really bad for our mental health and really choose us to kind of be more like a brick wall and not really express ourselves, as opposed to being honest about times where we're feeling sad or where we might struggle. And it was cool to hear Connor kind of share his own experience and then kind of challenge me a little bit in my own experience as I was really responding to a lot of the things that he was talking about. So highly encourage you to continue to listen to this episode, to check Connor out on Instagram at Man Talks, and then also his own show. He's constantly posting some really, really great content that really resonates with me. So enjoy the show with Connor and hope you're having a great day. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Connor Beaton. We'd love to start at the beginning for you. Obviously, I know a little bit of your story once you kind of started your company and really started helping people all around the world. But how was your kind of upbringing and your childhood kind of before all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in like central northern Alberta in Canada, which is, I mean, I've usually described it as the Texas of Canada. You know, there's a lot of big trucks, there's a lot of oil money, there's a lot of cowboys, there's a lot of cattle and farmland, except 6 months out of the year, you know, it's minus 30 degrees Celsius. So it's like Texas with a twist. But, you know, I think a lot of the stereotypes were there about how you should be as a man and, you know, what was acceptable and what was unacceptable. And, you know, I grew up like most Canadian men playing hockey and being immersed in sports and everything that came along with that. And there were some phenomenal parts to that. You know, I really loved having a team sport. I really loved playing hockey and having that in my life. But I think I certainly felt split at times because I was hyper creative as well. I was very active. So I kind of had this like sports side, this more sort of direct side. And then I also had this part that, you know, loved singing and would like listen to, you know, Michael Jackson or the Beastie Boys and, you know, I would record myself, you know, I had like the dual cassette player, right? So I'd like listen on one side and then put a tape in and I would record myself singing and stuff like that. And so I think I was always sort of torn about what, you know, what it meant to be a man and what was acceptable and what wasn't. But other than that, like I had a pretty decent upbringing. My parents got divorced when I was three and they both remarried. And so I kind of grew up in this very interesting environment where I grew up between two family systems that were identical. You know, my parents got divorced. They both got remarried within a year of one another. They both had a daughter within a year of one another, and then they both had a son within a year of one another, and then they both bought a dog. And so whether I was at my mom's or I was at my dad's, it was like two complete systems, right? Two complete families from my eyes, but I wasn't really too sure where I fit in within those structures. And so it was a very interesting experience. And on top of that, all of the characters in my families were completely opposing forces, right? So like my dad and my stepdad were like polar opposites. My mom and my stepmom were polar opposites. My sisters were different. My brothers were different. And so I got very good at reading people, understanding people, seeing diversity of thought and perspective and human nature and why people acted certain ways that really fascinated me. But I also got very good at being a chameleon, shape-shifting, you know, having to sort of adapt who I was to fit in. And that would, you know, that would impact me later on in life. But yeah, I mean, that's a little, just a little bit about my upbringing.
Yeah, I have somewhat of a similar story. My mom got remarried to the man that I call my dad. He's not my biological father, when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And he had two kids from his previous marriage as well. So it was kind of that blended family situation. And I didn't have any, I still don't have any relationship with my biological father. And I always felt somewhat confused in terms of where I really belonged. My dad had these other two kids that were his. And sometimes I felt like I wasn't. And I was left in this somewhat in-between area that I think also led me to just blend in and really exist in the shadows and kind of fly under the radar and do the absolute least at times. So I just wouldn't get in trouble or yelled at, things like that. My parents ended up also getting a divorce when I was 16 years old and my dad came out of the closet, and that alleviated a lot of that confusion, but also kind of how you were saying the two sides of yourself growing up. I was pretty much raised by my mom and my dad, who was gay and didn't have a lot of that traditional masculine energy around me. So from a young age, I was very sensitive and emotional and empathetic and kind of a lot of these traits that you would say are quote unquote more girly. And I think growing up, I was somewhat ashamed of those. And now I feel super grateful for them because I think it's led to this amazing brand that we've created and me being a mental health advocate and getting to share my story. But yeah, that I can relate on the blended family situation.
You know, I think a lot of young men experience some form of, we could call it wound, some kind of pain when it comes to the masculine, right? When it comes to men in our culture. I recently have been embarking on the journey of writing a book. And I talk about this in the book, of this sort of like plague of absent fathers that we've gone through generationally. And, you know, I think fathers can be absent in a number of ways, right? They can be workaholics, they can be alcoholics, they can be emotionally distant or completely not present, right? Or they can be altogether. You know, a lot of the men that I work with, they don't know their fathers. Their fathers aren't in their life in any capacity. You know, like for me, my dad, I saw him once a month, you know, or sometimes twice a month. And there was this constant yearning for more, you know, it's like, I want to have you around more.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of young men have grown up with that, you know, where they either don't have a masculine role model, or the male role model that they have is actually damaging in some fashion. And so to be masculine, to be a man, almost seems dangerous. And it's something that a lot of men need to reconcile with. You know, this notion that to be masculine is somehow inherently bad or wrong or dangerous disconnects us from the, dare I say, beauty or strength that is inherent within masculinity itself. So, yeah, I don't know if that resonates at all with you and your journey and what you've been on. And yeah, just wanted to drop that in.
No, it definitely does. I think for me, having my dad somewhat be absent like that, the biggest thing that it makes me think of is my relationship with anger. And at times he would act out on me, like if whether it was verbally or things like that, that he necessarily wouldn't do to his other kids. And I always thought that it was because they were his bio kids and I wasn't. And I kind of felt like a black sheep in that way. And now it's led me to have to do a lot of work around anger, because I so much associated that as like the evil big man, a kind of, and not in a healthy way. And now I'm trying to unpack how, like you said, there's beauty and there's vulnerability and courage in that strength and expressing our emotions in a healthy way. And anger being one of them is kind of what it brings up for me. But I'm curious for you, as you continue to grow up and have these two parallel families and these somewhat different sides of yourself, how did that manifest into your teenage years and ultimately when you were deciding what you wanted to be or how you wanted to go about your life?
Well, you know, my stepdad was very active in my life and definitely the most engaged parent that I grew up with. He was also the most dangerous in some ways, you know? And so my dad, who I wanted more time from, had this sort of other life. And my stepdad, you know, was my hockey coach, was driving me to hockey all the time. And so I kind of was torn between those two versions of what I saw a man to be. You know, I saw one that I sort of pedestaled, which was my father. And, you know, I kind of wanted to go towards him more. And then I saw my stepdad who, you know, was sort of like your classic man in the sense that he was emotionally disconnected, really short fuse, really short temper, but he was there, you know, he was just present. And so I would get into a lot of battles with him, a lot of fighting. But essentially what that did to me, for me, I guess you could say either one, was it created this rift within me where I didn't really know who I was as a man. I felt split. You know, I felt like I was of two worlds, like I should be one way, but I wanted to be another way, but I didn't really know, you know, I wanted to have more strength and more direction. I wanted to have more certainty in my life. You know, I wanted to be disciplined, all the things that I saw in my stepdad that I knew made him successful, but I also wanted to be, you know, creative and et cetera, et cetera. And so there really was this kind of dissonance within me that was unhappy. And I kind of grew into a place where I didn't like myself. You know, I didn't like who I'd become. And most of that came out of this chameleon nature of having to fit into who I thought everyone else wanted me to be, you know, who I thought my girlfriend wanted me to be in high school and who I thought my buddies wanted me to be and the attention that I needed to get by being a class clown, you know, acting out. And so it really led me down this path of, thankfully, exploring kind of everything. But like, I really fucking like pushed all of my chips into trying to figure out who I was and who I actually wanted to be and who I wanted to build and develop myself into. That might not be the language that 20-year-old me would have used, but it's the language that I would use today. And so, you know, I did construction and I worked outside and I built sidewalks and I sang opera and I bought a motorcycle and I stunted that motorcycle and I street raced it and I bought a Mustang and I did yoga and I, you know, started practicing meditation. And so I was this conglomeration of a paradox, all trying to figure out like, who am I and who do I want to be? Because I've lived most of my life trying to be someone for other people. Now, what I'll say is that initially that quest wasn't so healthy. It was mostly destructive. It was mostly destructive because I was miserable. You know, I was miserable and I was lost and I had a lot of shame and I had a lot of anger and I had a lot of grief and a lot of sadness. And no one had taught me what to do with those things. You know, I think this is the real tragedy that most men experience, is that no one's teaching men how to deal with, how to metabolize the pain that they've been given. And so when you as a man don't know what to do with your pain, you pass it on, right? You have no choice because you don't know what else to do with it. And so it just permeates out from you. It dictates your actions, et cetera. So that's what I ended up doing. You know, I lied, I cheated. I cheated on all the women that I was with. I started womanizing. I would be in a relationship and I'd be, you know, seeing 3, 4, 5 women at a time outside of that. And my sense of worth and my sense of validation as a man became very quickly dependent on the women that I was sleeping with or the women that I was dating. And slowly over time, I began to spiral out of control. And all this time, oddly enough, I started to pursue a career in classical singing. So I went and got my degree in music and I started to perform all over the world. But these parts of me that I were talking about at the beginning that were at odds, I didn't feel a sense of wholeness, started to sort of pull apart, and all of that started to get revealed. And so eventually, you know, I hit rock bottom. My life sort of collapsed. I was questioning my career. I didn't really like what I was doing, if I was, you know, really being honest with myself. My relationship fell apart. You know, the woman that I was dating found out that I was unfaithful and that I'd been lying. And again, the pain that I had been given from childhood, from the verbal abuse that I experienced, from the sometimes physical abuse, from the emotional abuse that I experienced, manifested in my life. And I saw the pain that I had passed on to, you know, specifically the woman that I loved and that I was with, to my friends who didn't know me, you know, who didn't really know me. They kind of got a sense of who I was through my charisma. And I found myself in a place where, you know, I kind of had nothing left. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what decision to make. But I was holding on, you know, I was holding on to this notion, this old school notion that, and I don't even really know where it came from, it may be the locker room, but this old school notion that to be a man is to figure your own shit out and to not break the what I call the one rule of men, which is similar to the rule of Fight Club, right? You don't talk about it. So you don't talk about what it's like to be a man who's struggling with depression or anxiety. You don't talk about what it's like to be a man who's, you know, imploding his life. You just don't talk about those things. And so I moved all my shit into storage, and I moved into the back of my car in my 2007 Pontiac G5. And I lived out of the back of my car for a few weeks until eventually I came to a place where I realized that I couldn't run from the pain that I had caused, and I couldn't run from the pain that I had been given, and that it was time to actually go deal with those things. So maybe I'll just pause there because I just said a lot.
No, I mean, yeah, I didn't want to stop you there. You're really in a flow. I'm wondering, like, for you, like you say, like, you know, like we're not taught, you know, as men or even as a society on how to like deal with these different emotions and really have like the tools to handle them. So do you feel like in your case and in many cases, like until you hit that rock bottom, then like you don't make your way out of it, and people just get stuck in that forever? Because I feel like that was for me, I know I've hit that in some ways. Mason has as well. So it seems like to be like a common theme. But yeah, just wondering your take on that.
Yeah. So, you know, when we create culture and society in a way that strips initiation away from men, what ends up happening is that men create their own initiation. And that initiation often isn't pleasant. It's often not what we want as men, right? Because initiation for a man, where he has healthy male role models, where he has men that have gone through initiation before, initiation is meant to help you confront and in some ways be overpowered by life, by something that you can't necessarily conquer. And without that, a man adopts this notion that he can conquer or overcome anything. You know, he kind of, it's like in your teenage years or in your early 20s, you have this air of invincibility around you or about you. And that often happens because we, you know, we haven't been initiated. We haven't experienced these things. So to answer your question more directly, I think it's both. I think, yes, certainly, if a man hasn't had healthy male role models, he hasn't gone through some sort of initiation experience, that rock bottom will act as a kind of initiation into himself, where he can reconcile who he is with who he has told the world that he's not, right? With who he has pretended not to be, right? I'm a really nice guy, so I have to reject my anger. I'm a really good person, but I act like an asshole behind the scenes. You know, I lie, I cheat, etc. So yes, on one hand, I think that that's normally when a man has told himself, which a lot of us do, things won't get better until I have no more options, right? We're fucking stubborn. We are so stubborn. And that stubbornness and that pride sometimes gets in the way of us being able to actually do the work. And, but there are, you know, I think that there are some men who have mentors, who have role models, who, you know, interject and kind of say, hey, you don't need to go down this path. This is where your path is heading. I know because I've been here before. I've hit that rock bottom. You don't necessarily have to go all the way down in order to create change. You could get off the train here. You know, it's like, you guys ever see the first Austin Powers movie? I know it's like super, super old. You remember that scene in Austin Powers where he like the, it's like a bulldozer.
Yeah.
A steamroller is like slowly going towards him. He's just standing there screaming. Yeah. Move, move, move. Right. And so, you know, sometimes in life, we as men know that the steamroller is coming, right? We know we're going to hit rock bottom. And so sometimes if we can acknowledge that we're on that path and we have other men around us that can support us in doing some of this type of work, then we can not step around the rock bottom, but we can learn the lessons that we need to learn before that happens.
Yeah, for me, I was standing in front of the bulldozer and I was being so stubborn and my ego was getting in the way that I didn't move until the bulldozer had already ran me over. I think I was telling myself over and over, and what I still struggle with is you can figure it out. You know, you can create some sort of world and maneuver and manipulate these people and create this web of lies and secrets that can kind of all balance together and create this world that you're in control of. And ultimately, I couldn't. And I hit my rock bottom in the summer of 2018 when a relationship had ended that I had all of my self-worth and value and happiness in. I can really relate to what you were saying about the womanizing and using women for just all of our self-worth and really creating this network of them to constantly make me feel good at all times. And since then, I started working SLAA, and that program has been super helpful for me. And I've been sober for over 3 years now. And I think the hardest thing for me to really understand still is the self-sabotaging behavior and like understanding how I can do that, right? How I can really love someone and how I know someone can really love me. And still I can do something that I know is going to really hurt them and to really feel like I don't have any control over it. And I think it's that fear that ultimately led me to losing everything and having to go away from treatment and is what has kind of kept me motivated for the last few years. And even more so recently, I shared on the show, like I started to notice some yellow flags creeping back up as I'm now a few years removed of that voice and that side of me kind of taking over again and starting to build the world a little bit. So I recently had to recommit myself to program and things like that. But it's kind of scary for me that I feel like it's always a part of me that's there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think that in some ways when maybe I'll just be a little esoteric or existential for a moment, and then we'll reel it back into practical.
That's all right.
When we have a severance with the masculine, right? The masculine being the father for the most part, or the male archetype in our life, that severing with the masculine creates a wound with the internal sense, especially for us as men, creates a disconnect with our own kind of self-reliance. So we don't trust ourselves as men because we have a wound with men. And until we get right with men, until we can know that, you know, sort of men aren't the enemy, until we can find a real level of forgiveness, both internally for the man that we've been and the way that we've acted, and to the men that have caused us harm in some capacity or abandoned us or betrayed us or neglected us or, you know, whatever that core wound is, I think that we always question a sense of self-reliance. You know, we always have this feeling as if we're going to go back into the dark waters, you know, that we're going to go back into the territory that we don't want to enter into.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what was interesting for me is really understanding what forgiveness meant, you know, because I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of anger towards my stepdad, towards my father, you know, for not kind of like coming in and taking me out of that place. I had a lot of anger towards the men in my life. And I didn't want to admit it, you know, for a really long time. I didn't want to admit that I was angry because I disliked my anger and I saw my anger as part of the problem, you know, part of the villain. I didn't want people to see the angry side of me. I thought that anger was, you know, a useless emotion for a period of time, but it would come out when I'd go to the bar and get into bar fights and, you know, in hockey fights and shit like that. But part of what really supported me was understanding what forgiveness actually is, which in the context that I'll frame it is the act of letting go of the debt that we feel is owed to us. You know, in a biblical sense, when you first see the concept of forgiveness showing up, and even before that, just from a linguistic standpoint, like within Greek mythology, forgiveness is about letting go of the debt that we believe or that we know is owed to us. And so part of our work as men is to be able to look at the people, you know, especially the men in our lives, our fathers, et cetera, who have harmed us, who we feel have betrayed us or neglected us or abandoned us or abused us, and to look at what we think is owed to us. You know, you should have. Why weren't you? How come you weren't there for me? What the fuck was wrong with you?
Right.
You know, and to be with that until the charge of that dissipates to a degree where we can say, I let go of the debt that I think that you owed me. You know, yeah. I let go of the man that I wanted you to be. I let go of the man that I really needed you to be because I have become him. I've become the man that I needed you to be. And that I think is so vital for every single man. I've become the man that I needed my father to be, or that I needed, you know, my grandfather or my stepfather to be, or, you know, my uncle or, you know, whomever it was. And in that way, we step into the role of beginning to father ourselves. We begin to father the child, the boy within us who needed that guidance, who needed that care, who needed that direction and leadership or comfort and didn't get it. You know, instead he got vacancy or abuse or hostility or vitriol or whatever it was. And so I think that this, you know, this ability for us to learn as men how to father ourselves is paramount, because that's what allows us to step into a deeper sense of mature masculinity, I believe.
And Connor, what is that path, you know, to fathering yourself? Let's say someone realizes, you know, either gets to that rock bottom or like learns that they're in front of the bulldozer, then, you know, how have you talked more practically, you know, like what are the steps, right? Forgiveness being one of them, but like how can someone actually apply that to their life?
Yeah, I think if I was to put it as simply and as tactically as possible, I would say that one, you need to identify the wounds that you were given by your father or by, you know, whatever man or male in your life may have harmed you or left you in some capacity. And this isn't to you sort of blame it all on men, right? We're just talking about men and fathers right now. So you need to identify, not to put like the total onus on that, front. I just want to make that clear. But you need to identify the wound, and then you need to identify what's the outcome from that wound. Like for me, I was disconnected from my anger. I was wildly undisciplined. I had no discipline, you know, because I thought, because of my upbringing, that discipline was a punishment. You know, that's when I was disciplined. I got punished. And that's the experience that most men, not most, but many men have. So you need to look at the wound, look at the outcome of that wound, right? What was the result? Well, the result was that I didn't have a sense of discipline. Okay, then what do? You begin to develop and parent yourself, father yourself by training in that development of that skill. So you begin to focus your effort, your energy towards the development of that skill so that you can see that you have, in part, healed that wound, that you've taught yourself the thing that you wanted your father to teach you. But I think that the other part is learning what it was that you as a boy really craved, desired, and needed from your father, getting as clear and concise on that as possible, and committing yourself for a period of time towards developing those things, giving those things to yourself, So for example, if you lacked appreciation and guidance from your father, right? Maybe your dad or your stepdad was verbally abusive, or he was always critical of you and judgmental. And, you know, you'd bring home the A on the paper and he'd be like, where's the A plus? And he didn't have any compassion. He wasn't able to appreciate your strengths. Then you can look at the things that you really needed from dad, and you can begin to develop those things in your life, to commit to working on those things within yourself, within your life. And you begin to surround yourself with other men who are going to hold you accountable to that. So the last piece is surrounding yourself with other men, surrounding yourself with mentors who you can receive feedback from, surrounding yourself with other men that will challenge you, you know, because the role of the father is to support you in taking some risks, support you in, you know, more moving outside of the family structure, to support you in creating order and structure in your life, and to be a sort of compassionate strength in your life, encouraging you to move just to your edge and then maybe a little bit beyond. So a lot of the men in our current world and culture, they don't have other men that they trust, you know, really. They have other men that they shoot the shit with and talk about sports to and maybe complain about their girlfriends or their wives, but they don't have men to sit with and say, here is really what's happening within me. Here's where I'm actually really struggling and I don't know what to do about it. And to find those places, to find those spaces, to find those men that you want to commune with, that you want to repair your own masculine nature with, so that you have an externalized example of what other maturity looks like, what other mature men look like. So I would say that those three things are where you can start, where you can begin.
Totally. I think the beautiful thing about that is also that pretty much the same playbook for any sort of mental health issues that you're facing or any trauma that you want to unpack and really develop. I think that if people don't have issues with their father or feel like they can't relate to that in any way, that really we all have shit. And when you want to work on it and learn more about yourself, the steps are pretty much exactly the same, right? Of really identifying what it is that are your stressors and that's causing you to feel that distress and that anxiety and those things, going back, talking about them, identifying them and working on them. I love what you were saying about identifying the kind of holes that were empty, or like what were the needs that we all didn't get as kids, because I think we all have those in some way or another. And then to give those to yourself and really service your inner child in that way, I think is so, so beautiful and powerful, and something that we're all able to do for ourselves that can really make us feel so fulfilled. So I love that.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one more thing on that front. Like, I needed to learn how to be compassionate in my discipline.
Yeah.
Right? Just like as that tactical example that I was giving, I needed to learn how to move out of discipline being a punishment and train myself into discipline being something that I could practice, that I could get wrong, right? So that I didn't need to get perfect, that I didn't need to sort of shit on myself and get upset and shame myself whenever, you know, if I wanted to get up at 6 a.m. and go to the gym, you know, I slept in until 6:20. So to have some flexibility within that was, you know, was vital. And so, yeah, I think identifying that, but I think the first place is really about confession and acknowledgement. Like Carl Jung, one of the great psychologists in the last 100 and some odd years, so that the first step to the therapeutic process is always confession. It's always acknowledging that there is something there that you need to deal with. And I think that that really is, for a lot of men, that's just the first step to be able to say, you know, I don't have it all together, or I am really struggling, you know, yeah, in my business, in my relationship, et cetera.
Admitting is what it makes me think of mm-hmm. the first step mm-hmm. in that way. To get a bit more current for you, what was the inspiration and kind of the story behind starting Man Talks? And if you could just share a bit about what that even is to our listeners and how it came about.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of came out of that rock bottom moment.
Yeah.
You know, I found myself in a very precarious position, and I remember having a conversation when I did finally start to let people into what was going on, and what was happening in my life. I had a conversation with a close friend of mine that I had gone to university with, and I just told him everything. You know, I told him what had been going on behind the scenes, how I'd been lying, how I'd been cheating, you know, how I wasn't sure about my career, and that how I really felt lost, and I didn't really know what to do or where to go. And he, you know, he broke down, and, you know, he thanked me for being honest and being transparent with him and opening up, and proceeded to tell me that he had tried to commit suicide 2 months before and that he had tried to hang himself. And I remember sitting there talking to him, you know, first off being like, holy shit. And secondly, just thinking to myself, how do I know everything about this man? I know what whiskey he likes to drink. I know what TV shows he likes to watch. I know what food he likes to eat and where he likes to eat and the women he likes to date. Like, I thought I knew you, man. I thought I knew you. But in reality, you've been dealing with this darkness that I had no fucking clue about. And same thing, right? I had been dealing with this darkness that he had no fucking clue about. And when I started to connect with other men in my life, I realized that that was everywhere. You know, that was everywhere. It was in all of my relationships. All of my male relationships were plagued with this surface level bullshit. And I hated it, you know, because I found that I felt like I only really got depth out of the female conversations, out of the connections that I got from women. And there was this kind of like unhealthy, childish neediness that I started to see. So anyway, the main part is that I wanted more from my male relationships. You know, I wanted to like know what's actually going on in the lives of the men that I surround myself with, to contribute to them, to support to them, and for them to be able to contribute to me as well. And so that kind of set me on this path. I ended up, thankfully and fortunately, I had a mentor in my life at that time, and he was in his 70s, and he was well-versed in Jungian psychology and cognitive behavioral therapy and neurolinguistics programming and just a whole bunch of different modalities, Buddhism and Zen. And I basically spent the next 2.5 years apprenticing with this man. And he would teach me psychology, and he would teach me about Jungian psychology and the Jungian principles and how to work with people. And, you know, in return, I paid him when I could. And other than that, I helped with his asparagus garden and chopping wood. And, you know, because he was in his mid-70s and he needed help around his farm. And that kind of put me on this trajectory of, at some point, knowing that I wanted to create a different conversation for men, you know, create a conversation where men could enter in, work on themselves, develop more self-leadership, more self-sovereignty, you know, to be able to rely on themselves, but also to break down the walls that so many men feel isolated behind. You know, I think that a lot of men show their girlfriends, their boyfriends, whoever it is, their partners, their friends, their family, a small sliver of who they actually are. And there's a part of us that we always withhold. There's so many men that are out there that have like 10%, 20%, 30% of who they are, and they withhold it from the people around them. And so I wanted to create a place where men could come in and share all that they are, you know, without any reserve or judgment or shame, to just say, this is who I am. This is what I'm really good at. And this is what I suck at. And this is how I'm struggling. And this is how I fucked up my life, you know, and this is how I'm crushing it. And so that's how Man Talk sort of started. I created an event, and, you know, initially that event was quite small. It was like 40, 50 people in Vancouver, BC. And then within the span of a year and change, we had events in a dozen cities all over North America. And just sort of took on a life of its own. You know, I started a podcast, and then I started to do more depth-oriented work with men and creating men's groups. And then eventually we let go of the live events, because what we found was that a lot of men were looking for more sort of small groups and more direct support. You know, the conversations on stage were cool, but what men really wanted to do was get in a room with other men and have really depth-oriented conversations about the world, about politics, about what was going on in their life. And so that's where, you know, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, we shifted towards.
One quote I have from you is just like this, like, pursuit of growth, you know, that we all have, or a lot of people have, and talking about how that's not like the only thing to worship, or like people need to like step back from that. I guess I'm wondering where that originated, because I know I'm just reading the quote in a silo, because I feel like I talk about it on the show a lot, am very growth oriented, and only now am I realizing that like it's fine to have that, but also the other side of like being okay with who I am today and being happy with the person I am, even if I'm not where I want to grow into over time. So I'm just wondering where that originated for you.
Well, let me put it back on you for a second. Where do you feel like you're not enough in life?
Yeah.
Just a very vague question.
Yeah.
Not personal at all.
Well, I think about growth in many ways. There are some areas that I think I am good, but I want to improve, whether that's like running our company or being a leader or eating well and being healthy. Like, I think those areas, I'm always like, oh, I could do better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in some of those areas are areas where the lesson isn't about perpetual growth. The lesson isn't about how do I, you know, blast through the limitations. It's actually about being with the limitation for a period of time and learning a sense of enoughness. You know, the masculine fault, illusion, addiction that we fall into is never enough, right? I'm never enough. I could work forever and it'll never be enough. I could make so much money and it'll never be enough. You know, I could build all the businesses and it'll never be enough. And so, you know, again, many of us as men fall into this idea or have adopted this belief that we need to continually grow, that there's no ceiling, that there's no end or limitation. And so we're completely disconnected from where our edge is as a man. And so sometimes our work is to just say, this is enough. I'm enough. Maybe that'll change in a year. Maybe I'll want to develop this area more in a year or a decade. But right now, this is enough. I can enjoy that. I can appreciate that. You know, I can give myself recognition and acknowledgement that I've done some good work, or I can just allow myself to let this be enough as it is, to not put so much pressure on myself to need perfection, because otherwise we never really are able to look at the ground that we're standing on as men. We constantly have this sense of wanting to be somewhere else that we're not, you know, wanting to be someone else that we're not. And if we don't learn how to be content with who we are, even if it's just for a brief period of time, right? Like imagine just being like, I am content with who I am for 24 hours. Yeah. Where you didn't need to fix anything, do anything, change anything, grow anything, alter anything, to just be content, to have a quality of enoughness in your life. The psychological change that would happen in that space is monumental. Right? Because from there, you can do a lot, you can experience a lot. So that's all to say, it's not all about chasing goals, right? Like in many different forms, in Buddhism, in Hinduism, in many different forms of religion, where they talk about masculine and feminine, which could be changed to anima or animus, right? Which is Jungian psychology, or yin and yang in Buddhism. The masculine is goal-oriented and the feminine is process-oriented. And so sometimes we just need to let go of the goal of I need to grow, right? I need to be better. I need to be more. And we just need to let go of that for a second and enjoy this is enough. I'm enjoying the process. I'm in it. I am. I'm working. It's good.
I agree. I mean, I think something my therapist brought up is like, why do I always feel like I need to grow on all these elements? Not that it's bad to want to grow, but I think it's just, yeah, that context is super helpful. So thank you.
Yeah.
I love it.
Because otherwise, because otherwise we're constantly chasing.
Yeah.
Right? We're constantly chasing. And so, yeah.
You'll never arrive either if you're constantly chasing. It'll just always be more and more. A couple quick ones. We know you have to go soon. We ask these same questions to everyone on the show, but the first one is, if you could nominate anyone for us to get on the show who you think has a very impactful mental health journey, or someone who's been a huge inspiration to you, whether you know them or not, who would it be?
Oh man, I mean, my initial thought is Carl Jung, but he's dead. So that doesn't necessarily help you. You know, a few of my mentors have passed. And so that's a challenging question. I think there's a man named Dewey Freeman, who I really respect. He's in his mid to late 70s. He runs the Gestalt Institute of the Rockies, does phenomenal therapeutic work. He does equine therapy. I think he's doing some really powerful and impactful things. And then, honestly, I mean, my wife is amazing, Vienna Farron. She's phenomenal. She's one of the best couples therapists, I think, in the world. So, yeah, probably those two had a big impact on my life, and I really respect them.
Nice. And lastly, Connor, what makes you mad happy?
Just doing this. Yeah, just doing this. Just where I am right now having this conversation with you is incredible. Couldn't be more happy, more satiated. Just love it, man. So I appreciate the opportunity to be in bliss for an hour of my time.
Yeah, thanks so much. We really appreciate you coming on. I know I learned a lot. I know the audience will as well. So really appreciate it. We'll link to everything you're up to. And yeah, keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Connor. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, it's so special to us that people care about mental health, care about what we have to say, care about the guests that we have on and the stories that we're telling. Even though I feel like Connor speaks a lot about masculinity and male mental health, I feel like there's a lot in there for everyone to take away. So I hope you're able to take something away as well for either your own life or a nice piece of information for your friends and family and someone in your support system. So have a great rest of your week, your day, your weekend, whatever's going on. And we'll see you next week. Thanks so much. Peace. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.